వక్రతుండ మహాకాయ సూర్యకోటి సభప్రభ నిర్విఘ్నం కురు మే దేవ సర్వకార్యషు సర్వదా. శివశక్త్యాయుక్తో యది భవతి శక్తః ప్రభవితుం న చేదేవం దేవో న ఖలు కుశలః స్పందితుమపి. అతస్త్వామారాధ్యా హరిహర విరించాదిభిరపి ప్రణంతుం స్తోతుం వా కతమకృత పుణ్యః ప్రభవతి.
Shri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning, greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 23rd of July 2020, and you're with me Team Radio Sai Sunil welcoming you to this morning segment Divine Glory on Thursday Live from the studios of Sri Satya Sai Media Center here at Prashanti Nilayam. Let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. At times, we may not be in a good position as compared to others. How should we deal with that emotion? Bhagwan lovingly guides us to help us avoid blemishes in our character, and I quote, "Resolve to emulate those who do better than yourself and earn equal appreciation. Strive to acquire knowledge, wisdom, and success that you aspire righteously. That is the real ambition. Instead, if you wish for the downfall of others who are successful, that very intent reveals your brutish nature. It will lead you to perdition for sure. Praising oneself and condemning others are also as deadly as envy. Attempting to hide one's meanness and wickedness, wearing the mask of goodness, justifying one's faults and exaggerating one's attainments, these are also definitely poisonous traits. Equally poisonous is the habit of ignoring the good in others and assiduously seeking only their faults. Never speak words that demean anyone. When we are friendly with someone and we like them, whatever they do is certain to strike us as good. But when the winds change and the same person is disliked, even the good they do feels wrongful to us. Both these reactions are not commendable." Unquote. This was taken from chapter 17 of Vidya Vahini. Dear listener, today, as the world is continuing with lockdowns and social distancing due to the spread of the coronavirus disease or the COVID-19, let us continue to take all the precautions mandated by the government and the health department, and also maintain personal and community hygiene, And also let us continue to engage in our prayers at our own places for world peace. And talking about prayers, let me now play for you the Krimi Mantra, or the verse from the Krishna Yajurveda Taittiriya Aranyaka. And the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses.
Om Atrinatva Krime Hanmi Kanvena Jamadagnina Vishvavaso Brahmana Hataha Krimina Gumraja Apyesha Vistapadir Hataha Atho Mata Atho Pita Atho Sthura Atho Kshudra Atho Krishna Atho Shveta Atho Ashatika Hata Shveta Bhissaha Sarve Hata Ahara Vadya Shrutasya Havisho Yata Tat Satyam Yadamiyamasya Jambhayo Adadami Tatahitate Khantan Rasi Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Dear listener, that was the Krimi Mantra, and the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the harmful germs and viruses. And talking about prayers, let me also tell you that the daily prayer sessions from Prashanthi Nilayam are streamed live on Radio Sai's Prashanthi Mandir Live YouTube channel, Sri Satya Sai Baba Facebook page, and of course Radio Sai's Asia Stream and Telugu streams, both in the morning at 8 a.m. and in the evening at 5 p.m. So you could log on at these times. The time right now in our studios is 51 minutes past 9 a.m. That is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I've lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book, Sri Sai Satcharitra, written by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by the third part of a Tryst with Divinity conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent diabetologist and also presently the trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, Prashanthi Nilayam. This conversation is taken from our archives. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book, and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy, holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic caused by the coronavirus disease be eradicated and all the suffering come to an end at the earliest. Samastha Lokaha Sukhino Bhavantu.
Papu Sahib Jog's Sannyas. Hemant Pant closes his chapter with the account of Jog's Sannyas. Sakharam Hari, alias Bapu Sahib Jog, was the uncle of the famous Varkari Vishnubuwa Jog of Pune. He had no issue. After his retirement from government service in 1909, he came and lived in Shirdi with his wife. Both husband and wife loved Baba and spent all their time in worshipping and serving Baba. After Megha's death, Bapu Sahib daily did the Arati ceremony in the Masjid and Chavadi till Baba's Mahasamadhi. He was also entrusted with the work of reading and explaining Dhyaneshwari and Eknathi Bhagwat in Sathya's Vada to the audience. After serving for many years, Jog asked Baba, "I have served you for so long. My mind is not yet calm and composed. How is it that my contact with saints has not improved me? When will you bless me?" Hearing the Bhakta's prayer, Baba replied, "In due time, your bad actions will be destroyed. Your merits and demerits will be reduced to ashes, and I shall consider you blessed when you will renounce all attachments, conquer lust and sense of taste, and getting rid of all impediments, serve God wholeheartedly and resort to the begging bowl. After some time, Baba's words came true. His wife predeceased him, and as he had no other attachment, he became free and accepted sannyas before his death and realized the goal of his life. Baba's nectar-like words. The kind and merciful Sai Baba said many a time the following sweet words in the masjid. He who loves me most always sees me. The whole world is desolate to him without me. He who tells no stories but mine, he ceaselessly meditates upon me and always chants my name. I feel indebted to him who surrenders himself completely to me and ever remembers me. I shall repay his debt by giving him salvation. I am dependent on him who thinks and hungers after me and who does not eat anything without first offering it to me. He who thus comes to me becomes one with me, just as a river gets to the sea and becomes merged with it. So leaving out pride and egoism and with no trace of them, you should surrender yourself to me who is seated in your heart. Who is this me? Sai Baba expounded many a time who this me is. He said, "You need not go far in search of me. Barring your name and form, there exists in you as well as in all beings a sense of being or consciousness of existence. That is myself. Knowing this, you see me inside yourself as well as in all beings. If you practice this, you will realize all pervasiveness and thus attain oneness with me." Hemad Pant therefore requests the readers humbly and lovingly that they should love and respect all gods, saints and devotees. As Not Baba often said, "He who carps and cavils at others pierces me in the heart and endures me, but he that suffers and endures pleases me most." Baba thus pervades all beings and creatures and protects them from all sides. He likes nothing but love to all beings. Such nectar, pure auspicious ambrosia, always flowed from Baba's lips. He therefore concludes, "Those who lovingly sing Baba's fame and those who hear the same with devotion both become one with Sai." Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 45. Kaka Sahib's doubt and Anand Rao's vision. Wooden plank. Baba's bedstead and Not Bhagat's. Preliminary. We have described in the last three chapters Baba's passing away. His physical or finite form has no doubt disappeared from our view, but the infinite or spiritual form ever lives. The leelas which occurred during his lifetime have been dwelt upon at great length so far. Ever since his passing away, more leelas have taken place and are happening even now. This clearly shows that Baba is ever living and helping his devotees as before. The people who got the contact of Baba when he was living were indeed very fortunate. But if any of them did not get a dispassion for the things and enjoyments of the world and had not their minds turned to the Lord, it was their ill luck. What was then desired and is still now desired is the wholehearted devotion to Baba. All our senses, organs and mind should cooperate in worshipping and serving Baba. It is no use in engaging some organs in the worship and deflecting others. If a thing like worship or meditation is to be done, it ought to be done with all our mind and soul. The love that a chaste woman bears to her husband is sometimes compared to that which a disciple feels to his master. Yet, the former falls far short of the latter, which is incomparable. No one, whether he be father, mother, brother, or any other relative, comes to our aid in attaining the goal of self-realization. We have to chalk out and traverse the path of self-realization ourselves. We have to discriminate between the unreal and the real,
renounce the things and enjoyments of this world and control our senses and mind and aspire for liberation only. Instead of depending upon others, we should have full faith in ourselves. When we begin to practice discrimination, we come to know that the world is transient and unreal, and our passion for worldly things becomes less, and ultimately we get dispassion or non-attachment for them. When we know that the Brahma, which is no other than our Guru, is the sole reality, and as it transcends and besets the seeming universe, we begin to worship it in all creatures. This is a unitive bhajan or worship. When we thus worship the Brahma or Guru wholeheartedly, we become one with him and attain self-realization. In short, always chanting the name of the Guru and meditating on him enables us to see him in all beings and confers eternal bliss on us. The following story will illustrate this. Kaka Sahib's doubt and Anand Rao's vision. It is well known that Sai Baba had enjoined Kaka Sahib Dixit to read daily two works of Sri Eknath, Bhagavat and Bhavarth Ramayana. Kaka Sahib read these daily while Baba was living, and he followed the practice even after Baba's passing away. Once, in Kaka Mahajani's house in Chaupati, Mumbai, Kaka Sahib was reading Eknathi Bhagavat in the morning. Madhav Rao Deshpande, alias Shama, and Kaka Mahajani were then present and listened attentively to the portion read, that is the second chapter, 11th Skanda of the book. Therein, the nine Nathas or Siddhas of the Rishabh family, namely Kavi, Hari, Antariksh, Prabuddha, Piplayan, Avirhotra, Drumil, Chamas and Karbhajan, expounded the principles of the Bhagavad Dharma to King Janak. The latter asked all the nine Nathas most important questions, and each of them answered them satisfactorily. The first, that is Kavi, explained what is Bhagavad Dharma. Hari explained the characteristics of a Bhakta. Antariksh spoke about Maya. Prabuddha, how to cross Maya. Piplayan, what is Parabrahma. Avirhotra, what is Karma. Drumil, the incarnations of God and their deeds. Chamas, how a non-devotee fares after death. Karbhajan, the different modes of worship of God in different ages. The substance of all the exposition was that in this Kali Yuga, the only means of liberation was the remembrance of Hari's or Guru's feet. After the reading was over, Kaka Sahib said in a despondent tone to Madhav Rao and the others, "How wonderful is the discourse of the nine Nathas on bhakti and devotion, but at the same time, how difficult it is to put into practice. The Nathas were perfect, but is it possible for fools like us to attain the devotion as explained by them? We won't even get it even after several births. Then how are we to get salvation? It seems there is no hope for us." Madhav Rao did not like this pessimistic attitude of Kaka Sahib. He said, "It is a pity that one who by his good luck got such a jewel as Baba should cry out so hopelessly. If he has unwavering faith in Baba, why should he feel so restless? The bhakti of the Nathas may be strong and powerful, but is not ours loving and affectionate? And has not Baba told us authoritatively that remembering and chanting Hari's and Guru's name confers salvation? Then where is the cause for fear and anxiety?" Kaka Sahib was not satisfied with Shama's explanation. He continued to be anxious and restless the whole day, thinking and brooding over how to get the powerful bhakti of the Nathas. Next morning, the following miracle took place. One gentleman named Anand Rao Pakade came there in search of Madhav Rao. The reading of the Bhagavat was then going on. Mr. Pakade sat near Shama and was whispering something to him. He was mentioning in low tone his dream vision. As there was some interruption in the reading by this whispering, Kaka Sahib stopped the reading and asked Shama what the matter was. The latter said, Yesterday you expressed your doubt. Now, here is the explanation of it. Hear Mr. Pakhade's vision, explaining the characteristic of saving devotion and showing that the devotion in the form of bowing down or worshipping the Guru's feet is sufficient. All were anxious to hear the vision, especially Kaka Sahib. At their suggestion, Mr. Pakhade began to relate the vision as follows. I was standing in a deep sea in waist deep water. There, I saw Sai Baba all of a sudden. He was sitting on a beautiful throne studded with diamonds, with his feet submerged in water. I was most pleased and satisfied with the form of Baba. The vision was so realistic that I never thought it was a dream. Curiously enough, Madhav Rao was also standing there. He said to me feelingly, Anand Rao, fall at Baba's feet. I replied, I also wish to do so, but his feet are in water. How can I place my head on them? I am helpless. Hearing this, he said to Baba, O Deva, take out your feet which are under the water. Then Baba immediately took out his feet. I caught them without delay and bowed down to them. On seeing this, Baba blessed me, saying, Go now. You will attain your welfare. There is no cause for fear and anxiety. He also added, Give a silk-bordered dhotar to my Shama. You will benefit thereby. In compliance with Baba's order, Mr. Pakhade had brought the dhotar and requested Kaka Sahib to hand it over to Madhav Rao. But the latter refused to accept it, saying that unless Baba gave a hint or suggestion for acceptance, he would not take it. Then, after some discussion, Kaka Sahib decided to cast lots. It was Kaka Sahib's practice that when in doubt, he would cast lots in all matters and abide by the decision as given in the picked up chit. In this particular case, two chits, on one of which was written to accept and on another to reject, were placed at the feet of Baba's picture, and a child was asked to pick up one of them. The accept chit was picked up and the dhotar was accepted by Madhav Rao. In this way, both Anand Rao and Madhav Rao were satisfied and Kaka Sahib's difficulty was solved. This story tells us to give respect to the words of other saints, but at the same time asks us to have full faith in our mother, that is the Guru, and abide by his instructions, for he knows our welfare better than any other person. Carve out on your heart the following words of Baba. There are innumerable saints in this world, but our Father, the Guru, is the real Guru. Others might say many good things, but we should never forget our Guru's words. In short, love your Guru wholeheartedly, surrender to him completely, and prostrate yourself before him reverentially. And then you will see that there is no sea of the mundane existence before you to cross. Wooden plank Baba's bedstead and not Bhagat's. In his earlier days, Baba slept on a wooden plank, 4 arms in length and only a span in breadth, with panatis burning at its 4 corners. Later on, he broke the plank into pieces and threw it away. Once, Baba was describing the greatness or importance of this plank to Kaka Sahib. On hearing this, the latter said to Baba, If you still love the wooden plank, I will again suspend or hang up one in the masjid for you to sleep at ease. Baba replied, I will not like to sleep up leaving Mahal Sapati down on the ground. Then Kaka Sahib said, I will provide another plank for Mahal Sapati too. Baba said, How can he sleep on the plank? It is not easy to sleep on the plank. He who can sleep with his eyes wide open can effect that. When I go to sleep, I often ask Mahal Sapati to sit by my side, place his hand on my heart and watch the chanting of the Lord's name there. And if he finds me sleepy, to wake me up. He can't even do this. He himself gets drowsy and begins to nod his head. When I feel his hand heavy as stone on my heart and cry out, O Bhagat, he moves and opens his eyes. How can he, who can't sit and sleep well on the ground, and whose asana is not steady, and who is slave to sleep, can sleep high up on a plank? On many other occasions, Baba said, out of love for his devotees, "Whatever, whether good or bad, is ours, is with us, and what is others, is with them." Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 46, Baba's Gaya Trip, Story of Goats. This chapter describes Shama's trip to Kashi, Prayag and Gaya, and how Baba, in the form of his portrait, was there ahead of him. It also describes Baba's reminiscences of the past birth of two goats. Preliminary. Blessed, O Sai, are your feet. Blessed is your remembrance and blessed is your darshan, which liberates us from the bond of karma. Though your form is invisible to us now, still if the devotees believe in you, they get living experiences from you. By an invisible and subtle thread, you draw your devotees from far and near to your feet and embrace them like a kind and loving mother. The devotees do not know where you are, but you so skillfully pull the wires that they ultimately realize you are behind them to help and support them. The intelligent, wise, and learned folk fall into the pit of the samsara on account of their egoism, but you save them by your power, the poor, simple and devout persons. Inwardly and invisibly, you play all the game, but show that you are not concerned with it. While you do things, but pose yourself as a non-doer. Nobody ever knows your life. Therefore, the best course is for us to surrender our body, speech and mind to your feet and always chant your name for destroying our sins. You fulfill the wishes of the devotees, and to those who are without any desire, you give bliss supreme. The chanting of your sweet name is the easiest sadhana for devotees. By this sadhana, our sins, rajas and tamas qualities will vanish. The sattva qualities and righteousness will gain predominance, and along with this, discrimination, dispassion and knowledge will follow. Then we shall abide in ourself and our Guru. This is what we call complete surrender to the Guru. The only sure sign of this is that our mind gets calm and peaceful. The greatness of this surrender, devotion and knowledge is unique, for peace, non-attachment, fame and salvation come in its wake. If Baba accepts a devotee, he follows him and stands by him, day and night at his home or abroad. Let the devotee go anywhere he likes, Baba is there ahead of him in some form or the other, in an inconceivable manner. The following story illustrates this. Gaya Trip. Some time after Kaka Sahib Dikshit was introduced to Sai Baba, he decided to perform the thread or the Upanayan ceremony of his eldest son Babu at Nagpur. At about the same time, Nana Sahib Chandurkar decided to perform the marriage ceremony of his eldest son at Gwalior. Both Dikshit and Chandurkar came to Shirdi and lovingly invited Baba for these functions. Baba asked them to take Shama as his representative. When he was pressed to come in person, Baba told them to take Shama with them and said, "After doing Banaras and Prayag, we would be ahead of Shama." Now, mark these words, for they show Baba's all-pervasiveness. After taking the permission of Baba, Shama decided to go to Nagpur and Gwalior for these functions and then to Kashi, Prayag and Gaya. Appa Khote made up his mind to accompany him. They both first went to Nagpur for the thread ceremony. Kaka Sahib Dikshit gave Shama 200 rupees for his expenses. Then they went to Gwalior for the marriage ceremony. There, Nana Sahib Chandurkar gave Shama 100 rupees and his relative, Mr. Jatar, also gave him 100 rupees. Then Shama went to Kashi and then to Ayodhya. He was well received in Jatar's beautiful temple of Lakshmi Narayan at Kashi and in the Ram Mandir at Ayodhya by Jatar's manager. Shama and Kote stayed for 21 days in Ayodhya and 2 months in Kashi. Then they left for Gaya. in the train they felt a little uneasy on hearing that plague was prevailing in Gaya. At night, they alighted at Gaya station and stayed in the Dharmshala. In the morning, the Gaya Wala, the priest who arranges for the lodging and boarding of the pilgrims, came there and said, "The pilgrims have already started. You better make haste." Shama casually asked him whether there was a plague in Gaya. "No," said the Gaya Wala. "Please come without any fear or anxiety and see for yourself." Then they went with him and stayed in his house, which was a big and spacious vada. Shama was pleased with the accommodation provided to him. But what pleased him most was the beautiful big portrait of Baba fixed in the central and front portion of the building. On seeing this portrait, Shama was overwhelmed with emotion. He remembered Baba's words, "After doing Kashi and Prayag, we would be ahead of Shama," and he burst into tears. His hair stood on end, his throat was choked, and he began to sob. The Gaya Wala thought he was afraid of plague prevailing there, and therefore was crying. But Shama inquired of him how he got Baba's portrait there. He replied that he had 200 or 300 agents working at Manmad and Puntambe for looking after the convenience of the pilgrims to Gaya, and from them he heard about Baba's fame. Then, about 12 years ago, he went to Shirdi and took Baba's darshan. There, he was attracted by Baba's portrait hung in Shama's house, and with Baba's permission, Shama gave it to him. This was the same portrait. Shama then remembered this incident. The Gaya Wala's joy knew no bounds when he learnt that the same Shama who obliged him before was his guest now. Then they both exchanged love and service and were most delighted and happy. The Gaya Wala gave him a royal welcome. He was a very rich man. He sat in a palanquin and made Shama ride an elephant and attended to all his comforts and conveniences. The moral of the story is that Baba's words came true to the letter, and unabounded was his love towards devotees. But leave this aside. He also loved all creatures equally, for he felt that he was one with them. The following story will illustrate this. Two goats. Baba was once returning from Lendi when he saw a flock of goats. Two of them attracted his attention. He went to them, caressed and fondled them, and bought them for 32 rupees. The devotees were surprised at his conduct. They thought that Baba was duped in the bargain, as the goats would fetch 2 rupees each, or at the most 3 or 4 rupees each, that is 8 rupees for both of them. They began to take Baba to task for this, but Baba kept calm and cool. Shama and Tatya Kote asked Baba for an explanation. He said he did not care to store money as he had no home or family to look after. He asked them to purchase at his cost 4 sears of dal and feed the goats. After this was done, Baba returned the goats to the owner of the flock and gave out the following story of the goats. "O Shama and Tatya, you think that I have been deceived in this bargain? No, listen to their story. In their former birth, they were human beings and had the good fortune to be with me and sit by my side. They were uterine brothers, loving each other initially, but later on they became enemies. The elder brother was an idle fellow, while the younger one was an active chap and earned a lot of money. The former became greedy and jealous and wanted to kill his younger brother and take away his money. They forgot their fraternal relations and began to quarrel with each other. The elder brother resorted to many devices to kill his younger brother, but all his attempts failed. Thus, they became deadly enemies, and finally, on one occasion, the elder gave a deadly blow with a big stick on the latter's head, while the latter struck the former with an axe, with the result that both fell dead on the spot. As a result of their actions, they were both born as goats. As they passed by me, I at once recognized them. I remembered the past history. By taking pity on them, I wanted to feed them and give them rest and comfort. And for this reason, I spent all the money for which you blame me. As you did not like my bargain, I sent them back to their shepherd. Such was Sai's love for the goats. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all.
Dear listener, Sai Ram and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan Baba. Today we bring you the third part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Specialities Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Additionally, Dr. Mohan is the president and director of the Madras Diabetes Research Foundation. This research foundation, which Dr. Mohan established in 1996, has published more than 800 papers, including over 500 original research articles in peer-reviewed journals, as well as at least 120 chapters in the textbooks on diabetes, endocrinology, and internal medicine. Dr. Mohan, over the years, has received numerous awards and fellowships. In 2012, the Government of India conferred on him one of the highest civilian awards, Padma Shri, for his yeoman contribution in the field of diabetes treatment and research in India. In 2013, he was awarded fellowship from American College of Physicians, USA, as well as from American College of Endocrinology, USA. In the same year, he was also conferred fellowship from the World Academy of Sciences for the Advancement of Science in Developing Countries. One can visit his website, drmohan.com, that is drmohan.com, to know more about him. What is significant is, in 1992, he was drawn to the Sai fold, and since then, he has had many incredible moments of experiencing the divine in his life at various levels. Bhagwan very graciously blessed him to be the convener of the Sri Sathya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, in 2007. Besides discharging his responsibility, he is also very active in conducting free rural diabetes screening camps in several villages of Tamil Nadu. Radio Sai's Bishop Prishti had a conversation with him in November 2013, in which he began with sharing Swami's instructions about diabetes management and then moved on to his journey to Swami and the precious lessons he had learned at his lotus feet. So here is the third part of this conversation.
So, Doctor, can you please now tell us the story of how you came to know of Sathya Sai, the physical form of Bhagwan? Even though there's so many instances from your childhood, you know that there was this invisible force guiding you. But when did you know that this force was Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba?
If I go back, when I look at my life from my childhood, Swami has been there in one way or the other. But the realization comes much later. So, for example, just next door to our hospital was the Damodar Envelope Factory, which Mr. Chaganlal and Mr. Chunilal, one of the earliest devotees of Swami, there was a small mandir for Swami called Shanti Kutir. I think it was built in 1959 or something like that. So Swami used to come there in 1960s, and I was about 8-9 years old. And I remember, you know, standing on the wall of our nursing home. We had a nursing home and our house was there. My father was also a doctor, so we had a small nursing home. It wasn't a diabetes hospital then. So I used to stand on the wall of that, and Swami used to be about, say, 30 feet away, addressing a small crowd of, say, 50 people, 100 people in the 1960s.
So you have seen all this?
I have seen Swami. So wow. He used to be, I never realized that 30 feet away, here he is, and I'm standing on the other side of the wall, and not realizing what I was missing in my childhood. I've seen him in person like that, you know. So that has been one incident. Every day when I go to school, in the car, there used to be a picture of Swami. So almost my entire childhood when I was going to school.
So Swami was there in your family in some way?
No, not in my car.
Oh.
So that's the thing. See, I used to go with a friend of mine.
Okay.
And that friend was a Sai devotee. And so there was a picture of Swami and I was going in the car. He was looking at me, but I was not looking at him. And I was wondering why they're having this picture here, you know, as a typical non-devotee. So, if I look back, at every stage he has been there in some form or the other, but waiting for me to take that first step. But after I took the first step, then there was no looking back. Because then he takes his 100 steps as promised, he did that in my case. And then very rapidly the connection started developing. And then I started attending bhajans in Sundaram. I was attracted by the discipline of the organization.
So tell us about this first step, which you consider as your first step.
The first step actually happened right from childhood. I had this yearning to, you know, for God. And something in my heart kept telling me that there's something else that I need, some spiritual thing. That kind of a thing was there all along. So in that process, I started going to ashrams. So first I went to Ramana Maharshi's ashram. I liked that, very nice, serene. But something told me, no, this is not your guru. You know, so somehow it didn't think.
Although this was in your student years?
Student days, school days.
School
I'm talking
days.
I'm 12, 13, 14,
so you had
teenager.
Spiritual inquiry,
oh, yes,
even at that time.
Absolutely, absolutely, no doubt about it. And so then when I was about 15, 16, I went to Aurobindo Ashram. I actually stayed there for 3 days. You won't imagine. As a teenager, I went and stayed there. I said, I want to see what the ashram looks like. I like that simple food. I like, you know, the simple way of life. Then I used to also, as a poet at that time, I used to write poetry and so on. So I loved Sri Aurobindo's poems. Then the Auroville concept. Yes. All that I liked a lot. In fact, I wrote a poem about Auroville in Mother India, in their magazine. But still I felt this is not it. You know, I like all that, but this is not it. This went on until I was in 1992. I had left my father's institution just with a stethoscope, zero bank balance. In fact, not even zero minus, because my wife had borrowed a lot of money and we had no bank balance and she had taken a huge loan. So we have several lakhs down actually. And with this, just a stethoscope, that's the worst situation you can be in. So then we come out not knowing what to do and then start our own institution. Okay. Just a few months after that, almost coinciding about 6 months after that, there was a conference in Bangalore. Just before going for that conference, something told me I must visit Satya Sai Baba. So I just rang up Sundaram and asked them, is he in Whitefield?
So this was just an inner calling?
Just an inner calling. Just before leaving for the conference, something told me I must go and see Swami. Like, you know, I had gone to the other masters earlier. So like that, let me just go to, it was not a strong calling, but something telling me I should go and see him, you know. So obviously Swami calling. So the call had come. So I finished my conference and they told me he's in Whitefield and he's due to leave for Kodaikanal on the Monday or something like that. And this is a Sunday. And Saturday evening I'd finished my talk and I was relaxing over dinner and with a Sai devotee friend of mine and a doctor friend of mine. So I was just asking him, hey, I hear that Baba is in town. Any chance we can go and see him? He said, are you interested? I said, yeah. I mean, something I feel like just going and seeing, you know, I've heard of him and I'll just go and see him. I've never seen him for many years now. So I'd just like to go and see him. He said, I'll take you. I know Whitefield, I'll take you. It's a long drive from Bangalore, but we'll go. So we went early morning. When we were just entering the railway track, we were just entering the level crossing at that time. There's no overbridge and all at that stage. So we're just entering there. Everybody's going back. Then he said, Dr. Mohan, I think he has left because people are coming back. This is darshan time. Nobody will come back at this time. So I think he has left. I said, no, no, no. They said he's going to be here. Do you still want to go? He said. I said, definitely we'll go. I mean, having come this far, you know, I might as well enter the ashram and have a look, you know. I just entered the ashram and then I don't know what hit me. Something suddenly hit me. And I told Dr. Shyam Sundar, who was the my senior in college and he's the one who took me to Whitefield. I told Dr. Shyam Sundar and I told my wife, Rema, this is it, you know. This is what I've been waiting for. You know, that inner calling is telling you, this is not it, this is not it, when I went everywhere else. Something suddenly told me, this is it. So my wife asked, what is it? I said, no, you know, I kept telling you that there's some yearning for this thing. This is it. This is what all my life I've been waiting for, you know. Swami wasn't there. Swami had left, you know. I don't know what the vibrations were or what it was. Straight I went there and into the mandir and I said, this is what I've been waiting for all my life, you know. And then I went, rushed to the bookstall and got some books and all that. In fact, one or two of those books I'd read earlier also. It had no impact on me. Very interesting, oh, like a story I read. Oh, Swami does all this. I mean, never made an impact on me. This time when I read it, it was profound. And I said, my God, this is, you know, something divine. This is not a natural thing we're talking about, you know. And then from then on, you know, there's no looking back. And from there, started going to Sundaram, started attending bhajans, and then a few months after that, Swami actually came to Chennai. So when he came to Chennai, I was go and wait there at 3 a.m., you know, to get the first line darshan. So at 6 o'clock when he comes out for darshan, he comes and stands in that balcony. There you get that early morning darshan with the sun's rays just coming out, no? For that 3 o'clock, my brother and I, Arun, my brother was also a devotee. So we just go and wait there. And then get his darshan and then start attending the bhajans. So from there, it was, you know, one step after another to another to another. But it was only in 94 that I first came to Puttaparthi. And that was another total miracle that happened. What happened was that we had gone to a Chinese restaurant and we were having dinner. And my wife's father, he is a very religious man, follower of Ayyappa, and he is a Guru Swami, and for 50 years he had gone to Ayyappan temple. And so I also used to go with him for many years after I married Rema. I used to go because he was a Guru Swami. The whole family were Ayyappa. In fact, he built the Mahalingapuram Ayyappan temple, in one of the big Ayyappan temples in Chennai. It was built by him and a few of his friends. So very strong Ayyappa connection. Because of that, he used to say, you know, when God is there, why are you going after man, you know? So, not to me, but earlier, in the family when people had said Sai Baba and all that, don't go after man when God is there, you know, you got temples, you got God, why are you going after man? He used to say that. We were all having dinner together, and it was March 1994, and suddenly when the dinner, just before the bill came, my father-in-law tells me, why don't you go to Puttaparthi? So for a moment there was a stunned silence, because he's saying it, you know.
Yes.
So we all were taken aback. So nobody had the guts to ask him. So being a son-in-law, I asked him, what did you say? Did you say Puttaparthi? He said, yes, let's go and see Baba, he said. So I said, oh, you want to go and see Baba? Why, I shouldn't see Baba? I said, no, not that way, because you are saying it.
And yes.
No, I feel like seeing Baba, you know, let's go. I said, okay, if you're serious, we'll go. I said, because we were already devotees, my wife and I were already devotees.
We had already
started going for bhajans, but he had never shown any inclination until then, you know. Then what happened was, it was around 10 at night, and from somewhere I phoned and somebody said, you ring up this number and they will tell you, you know, Swami's program and whether he's in, you know, Puttaparthi or not. He may go to Kodaikanal, we don't know what his programs are. He may go to Whitefield, we don't know. You ring. So around 10:30 in the night, I rang up to that number and Swami's then secretary, Ms. Narayan, and he picks up. And
oh,
he
at 10:30 in the night.
10:30 in the night. Okay. And I'm ringing. I didn't even know you shouldn't ring at that time. And so on.
And someone picked up with Prashant.
And secretary. Swami secretary's number that was.
That itself is a miracle.
That is a miracle. So he picks it up and he says, yes, Mr. Narayanan, here, Swami secretary, what can I do? Then I said, no, I'm Dr. Mohan from Chennai. Oh, you're the diabetologist, Dr. Mohan? I said, yes. I know you, doctor, he said. I said, oh, you know me? Okay. We want to come to Puttaparthi. You better come fast, because another week only Swami is here. Then he's traveling. So you come. I said, oh, we were thinking of coming 2-3 weeks later. No, you come immediately. Next 3-4 days, try to come, because we're not sure of Swami's presence. Next 3-4 days is here. After that, we're not sure. So we said, how do we get tickets? Because 7-8 of us are going to come. So how are we going to get tickets for all of us, no? That too, those days, train only. You know, nobody used to travel by flight, and we couldn't even afford flights and all those days. So we looked for tickets, how to get sleeper berths to come overnight. We just went, got all the tickets, you know, everything, all confirmed sleeper berths, everything at 2 days' notice. Now, it's in a train you won't get even those days. So we got it. We came to Puttaparthi. We had darshan of Swami. And strangely, Swami went to my wife and she got Padanamskar. We just went by. We didn't get Padanamskar.
Didn't darshan.
We just got darshan. Whereas he went and stood in front of her and said, take Padanamskar. So she got Padanamskar and she was all excited. She said, oh, my first trip itself, I got Padanamskar and all that. Little did we know why Swami had brought us at 1994 at that short notice.
Mm-hmm.
We went back and 3 days after we came here, exactly third day after we came, went back after this hurried trip, you know, after we went back, she developed a little node in the, painful node in the axilla, a little swelling. So she didn't have anything when we came. We didn't come for that at all, you know. We went back, third or fourth day, she had a little swelling in the axilla. So I said, we better see what this is. So we took her to the surgeon, he said, we'll do a biopsy. We did the biopsy, it turned out to be a secondary malignancy from the breast. You know, it's already spread to the thing, to stage 3 by that time, you know. She had fibroadenoma before that, and fibroadenoma we were taught as medical students will never turn malignant. So after it's been operated 2 times, we thought a third one was left behind and we said, let's leave it. Surgeon himself said, leave it. This is a harmless thing. Why do you want to do, you know? Turned out that that had turned malignant and that had spread here, you know. And she had no symptoms until we came to Puttaparthi. Okay, that is why the Padanamskar. Later on we realized that is why he had taken her and given her Padanamskar and all that, you know. Then she underwent the surgery and everything, regular treatment for cancer, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, everything she underwent. At that time, Swami came in my dream. And that is the time, see, I told you in 92 we were in bad shape. In 94 we were in worse shape because I had further borrowed to set up our, we were already in a loan when I left my father's place. My wife had a loan. I had borrowed even much more than that, double of that, triple of that, to set up our new hospital. So her old loan is clicking, our new loan is running, and she's earning member actually. I am, as a diabetologist, you know, my income is little. She, being a retinal, specialist, she does laser and photography, and that is one source of income. And now she has got this. It couldn't be a worse time for us in our life, you know. We were both 39 years old, and in the worst possible, my daughter was 13 years old, and we had one daughter, and she's 13 years old, and we have this huge loan, and then my wife develops this problem, you know. So we were kind of finished, you know, we thought that's the end of our life. That time Swami comes in my dream and he says, Mohan, she's got a difficult to treat disease, no? He says. So I say, Swami, can you cure her? Difficult to treat disease, no? He says. Then he says, don't worry, I'll look after her. She'll be there. Until you need her, she'll be there, he says. And then in the dream, he materialized Vibhuti for me. It was so real that I got up and said, where's Vibhuti? Okay. Then morning I told her, you know, and I said, Rama, Swami came in my dream and he materialized Vibhuti. Then she was disappointed that she didn't get the Vibhuti in her hand. So she said, after all, it's a dream, she said. Okay. Then she goes to the thing, you know, we have a daily calendar where the thoughts for the day are there, no? Every day, without the year, you have this thing which you keep changing. So she goes and lifts that day's thing and it says, dreams about God are real.
Okay.
So she comes rushing back. Mohan, see, I just said, you know, after all, it's a dream. And Swami has said, dreams about God are real, you know. So I said, yeah, naturally. So when he gives a dream, it's as good as real only. Then she said, no, in my thing I wanted, you know, I didn't think. So then we thought that he's going to give us, then she said, okay, but still, he has said that he'll give, if it's real, then he should give you Vibhuti, no?
Yes.
Then Swami has to give you Vibhuti. So happened that the following week I was going to Whitefield. And Swami was in Whitefield after that. So this is sometime after Puttaparthi visit. Treatment and all was going on and some July, August, something like that. Swami was in Whitefield at that time. So I had gone to Whitefield for just one darshan I had. And my brother had again accompanied me. So we go for this darshan. And then he didn't come anywhere near me. Okay, he just came, took another route and went off. And he never even came within 20 yards of me. So he went away. When I went home, my wife said, where's the Vibhuti? So I said, Vibhuti? He didn't even come near me. No, where's the question of Vibhuti, you know? He didn't give you Vibhuti? I said, no, he didn't come near me. Oh, it's all right, she said. And she went off. She's very disappointed, no? And she's still not working because the chemo and all is still going on. So she's still off work. And I went to work. She stayed in the house and I went to work. I went to work and I was sitting in my consultation room. And there was a guy, I sit here and my patient is sitting there. And I'm sitting and writing something. I saw this patient there, but when he entered, I didn't see anybody else in the room. Okay. I don't remember at least. It's two people walking in, and I distinctly don't remember the guy standing there. So, this patient is there. Then, after that, I looked up, I found another guy standing there. So, I said, oh, when did this guy come in? I must have not seen him. He must have come like that or something. So, I wrote the prescription and all that, and it still seemed a bit strange, because this guy is not looking at that fellow. Okay. So, I gave the prescription to this man, and he takes it and walks out without looking at the other person. If that guy is an attendant, he should have said, let's go or something, no? He never looked at him. He takes a prescription and he goes out. Then I said, oh, that's strange. Then that man is standing there. Then he says, can I ask you something, doctor? The other man, you know, can I ask you something, doctor? So I said, yeah, ask me. No, I had been to Puttaparthi. I got interview with Swami. Swami gave me Vibhuti. Some packets of Vibhuti he gave me. So, when I saw, that time I didn't have a single picture of Swami in the thing. I thought, you know, you shouldn't keep Swami's pictures. That was one phase, you know. No. People of all religions come. How can I keep Swami's picture? He was going through that phase. Then it completely changed. Through many other miracles, he taught me that now I have pictures everywhere, you know. But that stage, I didn't have anything. So, he tells me, I've got this Vibhuti from Swami's hand in Puttaparthi last week. When I saw you, I felt I should give it to you. I don't know whether you'll accept it. And that morning she's asked me whether you got Vibhuti. So I said, oh, with pleasure, you know, I'll take it. In fact, I was waiting for such Vibhuti. I took it. I never told my wife, you know. Those are days before cell phone and all. So I didn't ring her and all. I kept the Vibhuti packet in my pocket. And then I went home. I said, Rama, guess what? I said, you got Vibhuti? She said. I said, what? What are you talking? She said, did you get or not? I said, yes, I got Vibhuti. How did you know? No, you have to get, no? She said. I said, what do you mean you have to get? What do you think is doing here? I was talking to him in the puja room and said, first you come in his dream, then you produce Vibhuti in the dream. There's no Vibhuti there. then I don't believe that, and I go there and I say, after all, it's a dream. Then you say dreams of God are real. Then he comes to you in Whitefield. Then you don't go near him at all. And I'm still waiting for your vibhuti. Okay? If you want me to accept you as God, and I know you can do it, you are my God, send the vibhuti today. I want it today. I don't know how you do it, but I want the vibhuti today.
Dream has to become reality today.
No, it's much better than that. I'll finish the story after that. Okay? So she says, so he must have sent the vibhuti to you, he says. I said, then who was that man who came? He didn't seem to know the man sitting there. This man didn't seem to know that man. Don't tell me Swami himself came, you know, in some other form, you know. So anyway, then she takes vibhuti and she says, yeah, but that was not your dream, no? In the dream he materialized it for you, no? So now he has to materialize it for you, she says. I said, Rama, come on, you know, you asked him for it and he gave it to you now, come on. She says, no, it will happen, because dreams about God are real. I believe in it, and it will happen, she says. So then she finished all her treatment in 94, March, no? So by about 6 months, August, September, something, we finished all the, October, I think, finished all treatment. One more month we gave, I think, December we came here. December 94 we came here. He comes this time for darshan, and she is sitting across on the lady side,
yes.
Second or third row, she's sitting there. She can, I'm also sitting the first or second row, I think I'm sitting.
In the normal public?
In the normal public. I'm up till 2005, it's coming like an ordinary, standing the queue, coming, all the lines, like that only. Only after 2005 became a trustee, then I could get in. Then after that only, convener and all this. Ordinary devotee, just sitting there. This is 94 we're talking about. So, just ordinary thing, just sitting there. He comes, stands in front of me, materializes vibhuti, gives it in my hand, turns and looks at her.
Wow.
Now are you satisfied? Dreams of a God are real. So exactly what happened in the dream happened. And she is watching from there. You know. So once Swami says he will do something, whether it's in a dream or whether it's in real life or if he tells you or in some other form he tells you, it is a truth. We have to accept it. However impossible or improbable it may seem at that time, for Swami at his own time he will. The only thing is the calendars and all, we should not go strictly by our calendar. Swami's calendar is different from our calendar. He will do it in his own time. Swami's time he will do it. That much is for sure. This is how faith also gets strengthened.
And I am tempted to believe that partly it was because of her conviction, her firm conviction it will happen.
Exactly, exactly. Till the end. Till her last breath.
Even the vibhuti came in another way.
Yeah.
She was.
She says, no, that's not the dream, she says. Because the dreams about God are real, means not sending through somebody, no. Yes. So she says, no, he has shown you, he'll give it. You will get it, she says. And when I got it, she says, see.
God will go to any extent once you have that much
exactly,
of faith.
Exactly. So that's how it is.
Wow. Fantastic. So I think by the time 1994 ended, your faith in Bhagwan was
complete.
Completely conquered.
Yes.
And so from then on, how was life? It started getting better. I mean, you had seen so many worse things in life.
See, that was a bad period you went through. And then as he had promised, for 17 long years after that, she was there with us. Of course, a recurrence came. But before that also, he had told her that it's going to come. He kind of tells us and then does it. No, he is so much of the mother, Sai, is so full of love. That even that he tells us in advance, prepares us, and then does it. Separately to my daughter, separately to my wife, and to my daughter he said, you're going to go through difficult times. Because he has to prepare her to take over the mantle from Rama and from me, you know, to run the institute, which she's doing now. In the dream again. So then she says, Swami, but will you be there? Of course I will be there. But you have to go through these difficult times. But I will be there with you. He said, and that's exactly what he did. Right through. He was with us. So at every stage there afterwards, we began to feel his presence and we began to feel that he is guiding us through every single move, this side, that side, the life goes, takes its turns. But he was there at every stage. That was very, very satisfying for us. So our faith became more and more and more. For many years, I was still going to Shabrimalai, Guru Ayur and Shabrimalai. But Shabrimalai, because my father-in-law's thing, at one stage, I stopped. And the reason I stopped was several. The first was that I realized that when I'm going to Shabrimalai also, I'm saying Baba only there. I'm saying Swami, 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 Baba, Baba, Baba. Then I said, oh, I'm saying praying to Baba only here in the thing. Then there was another incident, which I would like to share because I think people get confused sometimes whether when they have, you know, there's a Ishta Devada in the house, yeah, and then Swami is there. So how do we, you know, reconcile this? Is it a competition between two gods, you know?
Will one god get angry,
jealous of the other god, you know? We don't realize it's all the same, you know, it's all one manifestation. At any form you pray to Swami, says to any form you pray, it all comes to me only, you know. But it takes time. When you have in the house, you know, this kind of thing is there. Or maybe the wife is not following one, the other is following another. These kind of clashes will come. In my life, the first thing that happened was I realized that when I'm going there, I'm only praying to Swami. So then I said, then I might as well go and see him in person, you know, when I'm praying to him everywhere else. So slowly I started, you know, shifting more to Puttaparthita. And so I get a thing instead of going there, then I'll come here. You know, that way I started coming. One day, two instances I'll try to show you how Ayyappa and Swami are the same. One of my teachers was there in Loyola College. And he became later on like a guru to me in the profession, kind of guru, because he looked after me so well when I fell sick in pre-university that he took private tuition for me without charging a single rupee because he saw my potential. Otherwise, I'd have failed in the exam. I lost 2 months of my pre-university. It's totally 8-month course. And that decides your MBBS and everything. You know, those days it was only 1 year for, you know, actually it's only 8 months. I lost about 2-3 months due to malaria, jaundice, and all kinds of things. Had chicken pox, all in a row I got. So I almost gave up. I thought I won. Then this man coached me, and then I became university first. After he coached me, I was first in the university. I got into 3 medical colleges and so on. All because of one man. So then I became very close to him. He became a patient later, and we got very, very close. And he also used to go to Shabarimala. So we used to meet in the temple before we go and all that. One day, he came as my patient and he said, that's a season, no? November, December, such time, the mala will be there. January, normally we'll go. Yeah. So he said, I don't see the mala this year. What happened? You're going later or something? I said, no, sir, I'm going to Puttaparthi this time, I said. He got shocked and, you know, because he didn't know that I had kind of, now I'm with Swami, you know? And so he said, Mohan, I'm saying that why you're not going to Shabarimala to see God? And you're saying you'll go to see a man, you know. Somehow to me, as your teacher and your thing, it doesn't seem correct.
I think, for listeners who are not aware,
yeah,
people who go to Shabarimala, for 1 month they have to
40 days. For 40 days you have to take a fast, and then you have to wear this thing, and then you wear black clothes, and then you don't wear your chappals, and then you walk barefoot. It's a kind of penance for 40 days. So, and Swami says, no, hands that help are holier than lips that pray. So, the whole concept changed to service and this and that and so on. So, anyway, he said this. So, he said, I am talking about you going to God and you're saying you're going to Puttaparthi to see a man. Somehow, it doesn't seem okay to me, he said. He took the liberty of being my teacher. I didn't want to upset him or argue with him. So, I said, sir, it's all the same, sir, I said. Then, I quickly changed the topic and said, okay, so you go do the tests and see me in the afternoon, I said. So, I wrote out the test for him and then sent him to home. He normally goes home, finishes his test, and then he'll come back in the afternoon around 2 o'clock with the results. Go home, take a nap and all, then he'll come back. He came back at 2 and said, Mohan, forgive me, I've done something very wrong. Forgive me, he said. I said, sir, don't say things like that. You're my teacher. What forgive you? Why should I forgive you? What did I do? I said something very wrong this morning and he has shown me. He said, I said, what, sir? What happened? No, Mohan, I went home to have my thing. I have a little drawer set of cupboard near where I think. The first drawer. In that first drawer, I only put my purse and my glasses. Only 2 things I put. It is empty. This morning also when I opened it, only my purse and my glasses I put on and came. After coming to you, I go there and I open the drawer and Baba's photo is there in that.
Wow.
How can it come there? I don't have Baba's photo in my house. In that same drawer this morning, it was not there. And you said both are same. And then I go and pull this and his photo is there. Mohan, forgive me. I said, sir, first of all, it's not me, you know. And second, Swami is all forgiving. He has just shown you that both are same. It's only a way of his showing you. He is not angry with you or anything like that. Since you raised that thing, he has immediately shown it to you.
Ayyappa,
and he has answered your thing. It's only a blessing. No, I'm very grateful because now he has opened my eyes and all that, he said. Okay, that was one incident to show that Ayyappa and thing.
Yes.
But still more direct thing I got, which is a real blessing. So, this was a time before I stopped coming. So, I was actually going to, in the previous year. So, I was still going to Shabarimala. So, I put the garland and mala and all that. And then, every day we do the Ayyappan Puja, you know. On Thursdays, we sing Sai Bhajans and end with the Sai Aarti. So, this is the first week after I have put this and Thursday has come. So, I'm supposed to do the, do we do the Ayyappan thing or do we do the Swami's thing? So, the way we have it in a house in a puja room is, Swami's picture is in the middle, okay? On one side is Ayyappa, big picture of Ayyappa. The other side is big picture of Guru Ayyarappan, because we are from Kerala, so Guru Ayyarappan, Ayyappa also. So on either side, the middle is equally big picture of Swami. Okay. On one side near the Ayyappa is one Paduga, because you have done the Paduga Puja here and all that. So Paduga, and the other side is another Paduga. Okay. And on each of these is a flower, on Swami's picture and Ayyappa's picture and Guru Ayyarappan picture. So before this Aarti thing came, I was just looking at the Ayyappa picture and saying, so what shall I do today? You know, should I do this or should I do Om Jai Jagadishwari and finish with that? You know, what should I end with, you know? I just thought that, and the picture from Ayyappa's photo, pong, it fell onto Swami's padam.
It just came out of...
It fell like, as if he has thrown it. It's January, December, there's no fan, there's no AC, there's no air current, nothing in the thing, just like what the garland I told you. So this flower flies like that from his picture, it flies and falls exactly on Swami's padam. As if he has thrown it onto
just
Swami's padam.
Just when thinking about this.
Just when I thought, that very second when I thought. And the story doesn't end there. Okay. So when that happened, I said, okay, so I'll take Om Jai Jagadishwari, I'll do Swami's. Now you have told me that, you know, you have thrown the flower there. So I'm going to do Swami's Aarti. So I took the Aarti to Swami. Okay. That is over. And I told my family, so what happened? I just thought this and this happened. Oh my gosh, it's true. Okay, right. Next morning, so the flowers are still there. Okay, so this one flower is missing. All the other flowers and all the pictures are there. Swami's picture, flower is there. Guru Ayyarappan thing is also there. Next morning, you get up early, you know. When you Sabarimala, you get up early, have a wash at 5 o'clock in the morning. Then you have to say your morning prayers and then puja and all morning, light the lamp, do the puja. So I got up in the morning and I was sitting there. Okay. Then I look at Guru Ayyarappan and say, he showed this yesterday. What about you? You know, talk the flower fell. My God, I almost died there, you know. It was too much for me also.
Yes.
Because it's only a thought, you know. There's not, I've not even said it in words, even that much air has not come from my,
yes.
I just looked at thing and said, oh, that picture is, okay, that thing is there. Then I just look at him and I say, what about you, you know. Talk the next one.
When you know so much, is it like responding?
You know, it's like, you know, my hair is standing up even now. So then I said, okay, now that's it, you know. Now it's Swami for everything. So Guru Ayyarappan is also Swami. So it's Sai Krishna, Sai, you know, Shiva is Sai, Vishnu is Sai, Ayyappa is Sai, everything is Sai. Then if you look at it actually, you know, Sai is father and mother, isn't it? Ai and thing.
Sai Baba.
Yeah, Sai Baba. So Baba's father and Ai is mother. Ayyappa is also like that. I is mother, Appa is father.
Oh, yes.
So Ayyappa. Then I realized, oh, that is also another connection, you know. So whichever way you look at it, he is showing it's all the same. Then I said, why all this confusion, you know? We are ready. So thing. Now, you know, it's total Sharanagata surrender. So from that time, it has been only Swami. I very rarely, I mean, I have all the pictures. I have Jesus' picture. I say the, you know, from the Bible, the Our Father prayer, because I was brought up in Christian schools. So the Our Father prayer, I say, I love that, because that's in the Bible, it says, Jesus says, pray. And he says, actually from Jesus' words. So I said, okay, it's a nice prayer, I was taught in school. So I say the Our Father prayer every single day. So I have my mother and Mary and Jesus there. I have Buddha there. I have sayings from the Quran there. I have the, you know, the Quran, Holy Quran, Bible, and Bhagavad Gita. All I have in my puja room, all ready. So it's Sarva Dharma, I think. But Swami's option, because I think Swami, when praying to Swami, is praying to everyone. So that is a great lesson which Swami taught me, and I'm very, very, very grateful for him showing this in so many ways. Then your doubt goes away, you know. Otherwise, he's always confused. I find a lot of people confused. Even a lot of Sai devotees are confused what to do.
Suddenly,
you know?
Something happens in family, and then you feel, oh, we have not prayed to Ishta Devata. Last
exactly.
2 years,
I've not done Tirupati for 2 years. I've not done this. I've done something wrong. I feel guilty. I don't think it's necessary. One form you pray to, once you have one form to which you relate, that's fine.
Wow, fantastic. So after you came to Bhagwan's fold, there's a lot of unlearning and relearning that happened.
Absolutely.
And which aspect of Bhagwan's teachings really fascinated you the most?
I think it's the
now
service.
That faith had come.
Yes.
But I think you were more drawn also to his teachings now.
To teachings, to the organization also. To be very honest, when I started going to Sundaram and I saw the, you know, that 6 o'clock tongue, the thing sounds, then it starts. And at 7 tongue, every time it finishes to the second. I was wondering, you know, so many songs being sung, different songs, how do they exactly start on time and exactly end on time, you know? This is a very rare organization. So I was very much impressed with the organization
also. Discipline.
The discipline, the way they do it, the politeness, the humility of the Sevadals and all that impressed me. But Swami's teachings, the universal brotherhood, you know, the Sarva Dharma, and then the love all, serve all, help ever hurt now. I think that's what appeals to everyone. Because I think irrespective of whether you're even an atheist or a believer to start with, whether you're a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian or Jain or a Parsi or whatever, once you say love all, serve all, help ever hurt never, I think it covers whole of humanity. There can't be better sayings than that. That made a very powerful impact. Although it's very difficult to follow. I'm not saying it's easy to follow. I'm not saying we're all following it. But those teachings, how simple they were. And then the parables and the simple things that he says. And every time I come to Puttaparthi, in his speeches, one line will strike. You know, once he said, if you're taking alcohol, don't bother to come to Puttaparthi. You're wasting your time.
He said that.
One of his speeches. Immediately I gave up alcohol, you know. Because that too profound a statement, you know, after that he gone. Another time he said, if you're not doing charity of some kind, you know, it's a waste of time. All other things you're doing is a big show. So you have to do charity. So immediately, then you have to do charity now, you know. See, it's a simple statement, but it hits you so, then for life you're changed.
Yes.
Then I have to do charity now, you know. Then I went back to the organization and said, can I join one of your Sai Krupas? Can I do free service with you?
Sai Krupa is the medical...
The medical wing. The clinics.
Sundaram.
The small clinic. Not only in Sundaram, but in many places in Chennai and all over Tamil Nadu, all over India actually. Where you have the small clinics, on Sundays, weekends, where poor patients come. Usually attached to a slum or something like that. So I went and joined. My wife also started coming. We set up a small diabetic clinic there. We set up an eye clinic there. We donated an ECG there. Small things that we could do. And then started seeing the poor patient. And the kind of satisfaction that we got out of that was something fantastic.
You just heard the third part of the conversation with Dr. V. Mohan, an eminent Indian diabetologist from Chennai, South India. He is the chairman and chief of diabetology at Dr. Mohan's Diabetes Specialty Center. This institution, based in Chennai, is a World Health Organization collaborating center for prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and also an International Diabetes Federation center of education. Dr. V. Mohan is also the convener of the Sri Sathya Sai Trust, Tamil Nadu, since November 2007. In the fourth part of this conversation, Dr. Mohan shares some incredible occasions when he has experienced the hand of the divine and also talks about the impact Swami has had in his life in various dimensions and also how it was for him when Baba decided to leave his body in April of 2011. In conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishu Prashti and this was recorded in November 2013. If you have any queries or comments, please write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and sign out.
Soham, soham, dhyan karo. हृदय भरो ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम आत्मा शिव परमात्मा सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे परम दया घन पावन हे परम दया घन पावन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे सनातन है दुख विनाशन हे
பதாரவிந்தம் கராரவிந்தேன பதாரவிந்தம் முகாரவிந்தே வினிவேசயந்தம் கராரவிந்தேன பதாரவிந்தம் முகாரவிந்தே வினிவேசயந்தம் வடஸ்ய பத்ரஸ்ய புடேஷயானம்
गतायाम व्रजनायिकायाम भुक्त्वाय चेष्टं कपटेन सुप्तं बालं मुकुंदं मनसा स्मरामि
बालं मुकुंदं मनसा स्मरामि गिरिधर बाला हे नंदलाला
गिरिधर बाला हे नंदलाला
गिरिधर बाला हे नंदलाला
गिरिधर बाला हे नंदलाला
देवकी नंदन श्याम गोपाला
देवकी
नंदन श्याम गोपाला गिरिधर बाला श्याम
गोपाला
केशव माधव श्याम गोपाला
श्याम
गोपाला श्याम
श्याम गोपाल
गोपाल